It's the Kim Monson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
I find that it takes work to get your brain around these ideas, and it takes work to engage in these conversations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
With what is happening down at the State House, I used to think that it was above my pay grade to read the legislation, and it's not.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
I see big danger in as much as we will be giving an unelected bureaucrat the power to make rules about what we inject into our body.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed. Let's have a conversation and welcome to the Kim Monson Show. I am Kim Monson. Thank you so much for joining us. You each are treasured, valued. You have purpose today. Strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. You were made for this time. We are at a historic time. Our country is under assault from within, and it is important that we understand the issues out there and engage in this ideological battle of ideas that we are engaged in right now, and be able to talk with our friends and our family and our colleagues about what is going on out there. That's why we do this show. And thank you to the team that makes this happen. That's producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. It is Thursday. It seems like it was just Monday, the day after Sunday, the day before Tuesday, just a moment ago, Steve.
Sure does. And I don't know. I'm sitting here pondering, you know, our open. Is it, you know, freedom versus force, force versus freedom? And, you know, they are inversely proportional. As one grows, the other one, you know, goes away. And I'm like I told you before in our pre-call, I am so disgusted. I can maybe just step away from this for a couple days.
Yeah, maybe. I was thinking about it last night, and yesterday I met somebody up in Boulder. I haven't been to Boulder for a while, and so met somebody up in Boulder late afternoon, and then spoke at another grassroots group up in Arvada last night. And I tell you what, Steve, I am so encouraged. People are waking up. They're hungry to know what's going on. I talked about the voter's guide, which I am diligently working on. We will be rolling that out in the newsletter this weekend. And I would highly recommend that you have that as a tool as you complete your ballot. There are three ballot questions, statewide ballot questions. And of course, we've talked lots and lots about this leap, this Patty's got it for me right here on this. I should have this memorized. It's the Learning Enrichment and Academic Progress Program. It is that new marijuana tax, that new state marijuana tax for the children. And as we were talking about it last night, one of the guys said, well, this looks like, in a way, it could be something that conservatives might really like. So you might not really like marijuana. You don't use marijuana. So it's a tax on somebody else, and it's for the children. And I said, absolutely. They've wrapped this up in a package to try to make it look like something good, when in essence, it's just a whole crony thing, Steve. And that is that with this particular ballot initiative, this proposition, I guess it goes from initiative to proposition once it's on the ballot, is that it puts in place an unelected, unaccountable authority board. The board members, the nine board members, are chosen by this governor. They choose their replacements. They are unelected, as I mentioned. They're unaccountable to the voters, to the state legislature, to future governors, or to the Board of Education. And they have taxing powers. They anticipate the first year that revenues will be around $135 million, and they can take 10% off the top for administrative expenses. What a great idea. Run a ballot initiative and then just line your pockets with the administrative costs. And the other thing about it is they say it's after-school programs for the children, but this authority board, again, I mentioned unelected, unaccountable authority board, chooses the vendors. So families, the money never goes to families where they can choose for their kids, for their after-school programs. You can only choose from what the authority board says. Sounds a very unrepresentative government to me. For people that believe in we the people, that is the representative government that we have here in America. this has got to be a hard no. And I am convinced that most everybody in America does believe in representative government. Now, we've gotten off the rails with this big administrative government bureaucracies. That's why we need to take a stand, and this is the first place to start.
Well, you know, we have many conversations across a given week, and we had asked, and you had even maybe were thinking about, you had this brilliant idea. I don't know who or, you know, what represents the marijuana industry in Colorado, but surely there is somebody who sits at the top of that heap. Want to get their input as to what they feel about this. Everybody and their brother wants to tax marijuana, and just, you know, find out what they think about all this.
Yeah, I actually talked to somebody in the industry, and they said, well, you know, we certainly care about children, but we also are concerned about higher and higher taxes. And the thing about it is, I had talked to a conservative that marijuana is their thing. They want to reduce marijuana use. And you know, that is a very laudable mission that they're on. That is their choice on that. But so they think that this tax would actually reduce marijuana use. And typically the economic rule is that if you want less of something, you tax it, except if there is an alternative market. And so when you get taxes so high on a product, it moves people over to the black market, which I think is what would happen here, which would then increase crime in our neighborhoods. And so instead of helping our children, we're actually making our neighborhoods less safe. And of course, then Denver, you'd mentioned this, I think, yesterday, they've got a ballot question on the ballot, and it would be another marijuana tax. It would be a municipal tax on top of this state tax. And so right now, the state tax is 15%. This LEAP initiative, or excuse me, proposition, would increase the taxes, 3% in 2022, 4% in 2023, 5% in 2024. But after that, they can increase it another 10%. So they could increase state taxes another to a total of 30%. And then you add on municipal taxes. And it just doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that this would be a boon for the illegal marijuana market.
Well, you have done, and many others have done collectively a great job at least tearing into this thing. Because you know what's going to happen next month when the TV commercials start hitting the air. And it's going to be this bleeding heart, do it for the children thing with no real, you know, in-depth coverage of the content of this. It's all hidden behind this do it for the children.
Absolutely. And that's why we are on this. I'm grateful that we got on in early. And yes, I've written an op-ed. Rick Turnquest did a very good one. And Patty, our researcher, has really delved into this as well. You can find all of those op-eds on my website, and we will be referencing those in the Voter's Guide as well. So thank you so much for joining us. Check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. And the recaps and the podcasts are there. We had been behind on that. We're almost caught up on that, so be sure and check that out. Sign up for the weekly newsletter. We do not blow up your email inbox. Typically, it's just one email a week. Very, very seldom might we do a second email, but that'll give you first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent op-eds, our podcasts. And thank you for emailing me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you for all of you who support us also. Our America's Veterans Stories this week, this Sunday at 3 and 10 p.m., features Army veteran John Lorry. And he served right after the Korean War, before the Vietnam War. And really a fascinating conversation, so be sure and check that out. And these shows do come to you because I have lots of great sponsors. And one of those is Hooters Restaurants, which is located in the Front Range, Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And they have football specials on Mondays, Thursdays, and Saturdays and Sundays. And they have dine-in specials, they have to-go specials, and if you're having a bunch of friends over, they have a party pack. And so be sure and check that out. I highly recommend all of my sponsors. You can find them on the sponsors tab on my website and click on the Hooters tab and you will find all their specials there. Let's go to, as you know, my friends, we look at these issues through this lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you should not have to force people to do that. And it's never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether with a weapon, policy, unpredictable and excessive taxation, fear, coercion, or the latest, and that is the Joe Biden government-induced inflation that we're going through. And that really, that is the silent thief for those that are trying to live on a fixed income, people that have put together their financial plan so that they can be responsible as they go into their retirement. And then you slap in this record-breaking inflation, which is government-induced because of policy. And kind of puts a real kink in everything, Steve.
Well, I heard this morning on USA Radio News that, you know, and it would make sense that the data is starting to accumulate and be analyzed. A family bringing down $70,000 is now shelling out closer to $200 increase in the basics, like, fuel, groceries. So, you know, $200 per month increase.
Yeah, it is a silent thief. And again, this is government-induced inflation. Remember under Trump that the real income had grown for families for the first time in quite some time. Black home ownership was up 5 or 6 percentage points. And you can see the difference between policies. So those that may have not liked Trump's tweets or his demeanor, gosh, his policies were really helping everyday hardworking people. I want to go to our quotes for today. I actually pulled two, and they're by H.L. Mencken. He was an American journalist, essayist, satirist, cultural critic, and scholar of American English. He commented widely on the social scene, literature, music, prominent politicians, and contemporary movements. His satirical reporting on the Scopes trial, which he dubbed the Monkey Trial, also gained him attention. He was born in 1880. He died in 1956. So I'll go to the first one, Steve. He said, on some great and glorious day, the plain folks of the land will reach their heart's desire at last, and the White House will be adorned by a downright moron.
I was hoping you would do that one.
There's some other comments we could make on that, but I'll just let that percolate out there.
Yeah, just let that one sit.
And this other one, he said, the whole aim of practical politics is to keep the populace alarmed and hence clamorous to be led to safety by menacing it with an endless series of, hobgoblins? Is that how you say that?
Yeah.
All of them imaginary. And again, he was born in 1880. He died in 1956. My friends, there's nothing new that's going on here. It's just we are now on a much bigger scale and it's going on at warp speed, Steve.
And potentially more destructive.
It is. It's very destructive. So that is why we do the show. We've got to engage in this battle of ideas. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Dr. Jill Vecchio. There is something that has happened right here in Colorado regarding freedom versus force, force versus freedom, that is very disturbing. And we'll talk to Dr. Jill Vecchio about that when we return.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, MONSON.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you for your support. We so appreciate you. On the line with me is Dr. Jill Vecchio. And she is a radiologist by day. She helps save women's lives by detecting breast cancer. She was one of the few people that actually read the complete PPACA, the Obamacare Act, the Affordable Care Act, and really was warning people about what the agenda was there. And we're seeing so much of that play out. But there's something that has happened right here in Colorado, which is just beyond belief and reported by a number of different news sources. But this is from Fox News. And it says the University of Colorado Health denies a kidney transplant to an unvaccinated woman in stage 5 renal failure. And apparently both the donor and the one to receive the transplant, neither one of them have been vaccinated. I think that the woman has actually had COVID, so she has antibodies. But now we have a hospital that is denying treatment. Dr. Jill Vecchio, did you ever think that you would see this happen in the medical industry?
These days, I guess I can't say that I'm surprised at anything, but it certainly is frightening. Really frightening. Now, there can be some justification for them wanting her to be vaccinated, but if she's truly had COVID, she should have better antibodies than the vaccine gives, but they're ignoring that medical truth in the push for the vaccine. These people are usually, they're by definition very sick people because they're at end stage organ failure of whatever organ they need transplanted. By the way, this has already happened at University of Washington as well with a gentleman needing, I think, a heart transplant, that they've done the same thing. So this is, they're already starting it out. Everything starts in California, Washington, Oregon, or Colorado, or New York, right? So they've already started this very slippery slope, sheer ice, worse than Keystone on a warm day. So these people are already very, very sick. So whether or not how she would respond to the vaccine, you know, because you get kind of sick after the vaccine, or a lot of people do, you know, who knows what the risk of getting the vaccine itself would be. But as a physician, it would be completely reasonable to say, now's the time to get the vaccine, because once you get your transplant, people who are, they go on medications to suppress their immune system so that their body doesn't reject the transplant. Your body is going to always see the transplanted organ as a foreign body, and therefore your body is going to want to attack it. They call it graft versus host disease. So that your body is going to want to attack and kill the transplanted organ. So they have to go on immunosuppressive drugs that puts them at risk for all kinds of infections. I mean, COVID isn't the only risk that these people have to face. Every single day, they're at risk for a life-threatening infection. Some exposure to just about anything can really put them at risk because they're so immunosuppressed from the medications they take after their transplant. After a transplant, a lot of these patients aren't able to generate antibodies even when stimulated with a vaccine. So a lot of times they don't, because their immune systems are so suppressed, they can't make the antibodies that the vaccine is trying to induce them to make. And there are certain vaccines that they can't take, like live attenuated vaccines. They can't take those, like measles, mumps, rubella. So these people are already, they're already sick. They're already at risk for all kinds of infections. So why are we focused only on COVID? And there have been no randomized clinical trials, none, involving immunocompromised patients, certainly not pre-transplant patients. These patients, now granted, these people also have, you know, they're sick, they also have a lot of comorbid conditions like hypertension, heart disease, diabetes, that are in that category for people having a really bad outcome and being hospitalized and put on ventilators and dying because or when they're infected with COVID. So in and of itself, they are at increased risk. So it's a difficult decision to make, But the fact, number one, the fact that she's already had COVID, but let's, you know, like I said, they're ignoring that medical truth that you have better antibodies once you've had COVID than you'll get from the vaccine. The other thing is, if she gets the vaccine, the studies that have been done on immunocompromised patients or that have included some, there haven't been really good studies, but they do this meta-analysis and, you know, try and conglomerate all of the data from all these different studies into one study, which never works. It's always terrible data. Anyway, what they know, what they have been able to discern, is that a lot of times the post-transplant patients on immunosuppressive drugs can't generate a good response to a vaccine. And if they have antibodies from a prior vaccine, those antibodies are suppressed from being activated. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay, I haven't lost you completely. So there's a good reason why a doctor would recommend it. But at the same time, there's a really good chance that it's only going to be short-lived. Now, most doctors would say, you know, but it's better than nothing, except that she's already had COVID. So it's all kind of, it's more political than anything. And let's face it, the reason that they're doing this is to get this headline. They want this headline. They want people to be, you know, they're pitting us against the vaccinated versus the unvaccinated, and people are going to go, well, it's their own fault for not being vaccinated. What's the big problem? Blah, 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 blah. Well, when there's been absolutely no study done on it, it's a risk to take the vaccine. The advantages of taking the vaccine are questionable and probably very limited as to how much good she's going to gain from that vaccine. And let's face it, people that are alcoholics can get a liver transplant. You know, people engaging in risky behavior can still get organ transplants. So this is no different than somebody that, you know, that goes rock climbing. You know, getting, it's probably not a great analogy, but at the same time, there are plenty of people who engage in risky behavior that are allowed to get transplants. And if they're considering her not wanting a COVID vaccine as being risky behavior, then they need to put her in the same category with a whole bunch of other people that are there too. And these post-transplant patients, like I said, they're at risk for all kinds of infections. So COVID, yeah, it can have a bad outcome. But we also have monoclonal antibody, like Regeneron that Trump got. So that's a monoclonal antibody therapy. There are all kinds of those that are approved for use by the FDA for emergency use that can be used to, you know, kind of replace that her own body's lack of ability to make antibodies. So we have monoclonal antibody therapy. So if she's treated properly, if she gets COVID, then that can happen whether or not she gets the vaccine. Once she gets the transplant, she can still get infected with COVID. She can still get it. She can still get hospitalized because she can't make the antibodies in spite of the fact she's had the vaccine. So the whole thing just doesn't, if you're talking about risk versus benefit, isn't it more beneficial for this lady to make her own decision about the vaccine, get the transplant, or is it better to just let her rot and die? Because that's the choice they've made.
It's really unbelievable to me. And as I read this story, first of all, they do not quote the spokesman from what I can see from UC Health. It's now UC Health said, well, UC Health, there is a spokesperson, but it's so interesting that there's no name now that is associated with that. But it also says here that for transplant, they're quoted as saying, for transplant patients who contract COVID-19, the mortality rate ranges from about 20% to more than 30%. And this shows the extreme risk that COVID-19 poses to transplant recipients after their surgeries. Well, quite frankly, if she doesn't get the surgery, the outcome is probably going to be very, very serious. And it's like, who are they to make that decision for her? So what's your final thought on this, Jill? Because I think that this really is medical tyranny.
Well, I think, and the question is, who made this decision, like you said? Who is responsible for this decision? Chances are it's hospital administration and not the doctors themselves. Although, you have to know that CU Medical School now has people on its board. The board of the medical school is a single-payer health care guy. The guy has written books and traveled the world promoting single-payer health care. He's on the board. They're being taught social justice in medical school. They're being taught that single-payer health care is the best system. I have been there many times. I've done many debates at CU Med School, and believe me, I'm a pariah over there, even though I graduated from there and did my fellowship there and my residency there. So it's like, yeah. And these kids are being so brainwashed and indoctrinated into socialized medicine and accepting everything, socialized medicine, government control of everything, that that whole system has been so corrupted. It's frightening. This is your future, folks.
Well, and to that
point,
the idea
that doctors don't stand up and say something is frightening to me. That scares the crap out of me.
Well, they're being threatened with their licenses and their livelihoods as well. So, but that's why we need to continue to shed light on this. And Jill, you called it back there when you were doing all those meetings regarding Obamacare, socialized medicine. You get to administrators and they start to make decisions on who lives and who dies. And here we're seeing it right here in Colorado. So Dr. Jill Vecchio, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure. And I learned so much when you are on the show.
Thanks. Take care.
Okay. And we're going to talk with Lauren Levy. He is another great sponsor of both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. And he is a specialist in the mortgage arena. He works with a lot of different companies so that you can get a mortgage that's just fit for your individual needs. And his company is Polygon Financial Group. Lauren Levy, welcome to the show. Hey, Lauren, I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are about this big spending bill that is in Congress right now. I mean, I see it as a disaster for America, but what do you think about it?
I look at things, you know, on a financial side of things. I'm worried about, you know, we've been talking for a long time now about the amount of money that's being put into the market that could possibly be creating the inflation that we're seeing now. And you go and dump another, you know, trillion and a half or whatever it is, $3.5 trillion, whatever they end up negotiating to, and flooding the market with more dollars, that's just going to create more inflation than what we're seeing now, which in our world will drive rates further up on the mortgage side of things. But I think just cause overall inflation that we're not, in, you know, we're already seeing and we don't need any more of it.
Well, and Lauren, we've had Jay Davidson on just recently, and he really taught me that there's two kinds of inflation. There is a good inflation when the economy is humming and people have more money in their pocket and they're buying goods and services, which automatically, because of supply and demand, will make prices increase. But what we have over here is this government-induced inflation, which is terrible for everyday hardworking people. And it seems like the Democrats are just putting the pedal to the metal on just increasing that. They're not even stopping it. And, I mean, a lot of people ask why. I don't know the answer. Do you have an answer to that?
I mean, I think some of it is just to have a win, right? I mean, they've got control of a lot of the government right now, and the more they can do to make it look like they have a win is one of the reasons, I would think. You know, that other person that you mentioned about talking about inflation, I agree. If there was no inflation ever, then, you know, our salaries would still be those of what our parents were when, you know, 30, 40 years ago. So there needs to be some good, normal inflation to keep things growing and, you know, keep people moving along. But you start to have inflation outpace wage growth and outpace the amount of money people are making, and all of a sudden you're getting a dent in their wallets, and that's the inflation that people don't want. And that's what we're seeing a little bit, especially with gas prices and a lot of other things right now.
What about interest rates? Where are they at right now?
So we've seen a little bit of a tick up in the last week or two. This is not the first time this has happened. It's happened, you know, a couple times in the last year and a half. It seems like every 6 months something happens and pushes 30-year mortgage rates a little bit up over 3 to like the 3.1 range. And then all the other times they've come back down because something has happened, whether it be COVID or some other indicator of some financial number. So we'll see how this plays out. But for right now, in the last couple of weeks, they've ticked up a little bit.
Okay. But now still is, if you're looking to buy a house, rates are low compared to what we're looking at on the horizon. How can people reach you, Lauren Levy?
Well, the best way is to call at 303-880-8881. And rates are still low, and I think we're starting to see a little bit more of housing pop up as far as inventory goes, which will help if you're a home buyer. So it's still a great time to get pre-qualified and get ready to get looking.
Well, and I, to that point, I've seen several for sale signs in my neighborhood, so I think there is more inventory there. We'll talk to Karen Levine next week about that. Lauren Levy, his number again is 303-880-8881. Lauren, thanks so much. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, thank you, Kim.
And we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll continue the conversation about all of this force in the medical arena, so stay tuned.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Americans Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, Sunday afternoons at 3, here on KLZ 560 AM and KLZ 100.7.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. As you all know, we are an independent voice. And one of the ways that we're on the air is because I have really great partners. And one of those is Castlegate Knife and Tool. Hal Van Herke and is an entrepreneur, and they have just a great store right here in Sedalia, Colorado. They have knives from the best blade makers from throughout the world. So whether or not you are a collector or a sportsman, a chef, if you need a gift, Castlegate Knife and Tool is the place for you. And first responders, our military and our veterans, receive a discount every day, all day long. And if you make your life, your living, with a knife, whether or not a butcher or you know, that is your main tool, through the month of October, they are offering 20% off on knife sharpening. So be sure and check out Castlegate.com. That's Castlegate.com. And let them know that you know me. I greatly appreciate that. On the line with me is Dr. James Lyons Weiler, and he is the founder of IPAC, the Institute of Pure and Applied Knowledge. And it's been a couple of months since we've talked to him. He totally understands and is watching what's going on with all of these forced vaccine mandates. Jack, it's great to have you on the show again.
Kim, thanks. It's great to be here.
Boy, a lot has happened since we last talked. And one of our bylines, Jack, is we look at these issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something's a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do that. And socialism ultimately comes down to force. Socialism is not about free stuff. That's the carrot to get people to vote for it. But it comes down to force. And from when we first started our conversations, I just cannot believe the amount of force and coercion that we're seeing come down from the government on everyday people. What's your thoughts about that right now, Jack?
Well, they've really shown their face now, haven't they?
They have.
Yeah. So they do this mission creep with the vaccine mandates. They start with, you know, you have to vaccinate for other people to protect them. And now we know that the vaccine doesn't prevent transmission. Then it's, well, you have to vaccinate to protect yourself. And, well, now we know that the vaccines that are available actually work on extinct variants. They don't work on the new variants. And yet they just stare at the camera, or they write their articles, or they talk to their colleagues in government, and they pass the buck on who's the bad guy from, you know, centralized U.S. government to businesses, and the businesses is not working with the businesses, so now they're going to state governments, and they're going to county governments and municipalities to push the coercion down. And the idea that you can coerce a vaccine that neither prevents transmission nor prevents infection, and that's what the valid numbers, the credible numbers that are published out of Israel and out of the data from Massachusetts, those data don't have the CDC's sleight of hand analysis where they call the vaccinated, well, wait a minute, you're only vaccinated if you survive 14 days past your second dose of the vaccine. If they included all the data from people that on day one through day 13 after the vaccine, who get the vaccine, the second dose, and the people up, you know, between the first exposure. And so they have a huge, huge population of people that are exposed to the vaccine, but they call them unvaccinated. And the CDC does this. That's the they I'm talking about. They manipulate the math. And the world knows that the vaccine, the UK is, the vaccines have failed. The UK is moving towards treatments. The UK is working towards just going back to normal. Other countries are just going back to normal. There's concern, of course, over people that might get sick and die, but there's no action whatsoever on looking at the prediction science that tells us we know full well who's going to get serious COVID. And they could be prioritized for treatment. Instead, we act as they want us all to act as if we don't know half the other half of the story. And the good news is that half of America knows the rest of the story. So when they're going after the economics, I appreciate your focus on the inflation this morning with your guests. When they focus on the economics, the bottom line, and they coerce people, they think, well, listen, we're going to take your job away in healthcare. Well, every day I see another report, 800 healthcare workers quit, 1,400 healthcare workers quit. There's healthcare workers that are, and I don't call them healthcare workers, I call them medical professionals. The medical professionals that are leaving the healthcare industry are now free to go and create medical co-ops. They're free to go and create even just a private practice in anticipation of hiring their colleagues out when they quit too, because there's going to be unnecessary, ineffective, repeated boosters that are expected of the way that the laws are written. Well, it's not a law. The way the decrees have come down through administrative rulemaking. I think a lot of Americans wonder where does the government get this power to have an agency like OSHA, just, you know, with a, based on Biden's And I'm not being political here. I'm just telling the history of what happened based on Biden's decision to tell OSHA, you're going to have a new rule that you have to vaccinate, or you can't work in a company that has X number of people, 100 people or more. Well, where does that administrative rulemaking, where does that power come from? There's been a massive shift.
Yeah, he's out of his lane on this. This is not representative government with what he's doing on this, Jack.
Well, this is not new. This is what I'm saying. So what a lot of people don't understand is that there's been an increasing over the past four decades when the regulatory agencies were created, when the regulation of industry, when the regulation of everything, every aspect of our lives. Those agencies are empowered with administrative rulemaking that has the feel of ruling by decree, because it is ruling by decree. And they are supposed to answer to the representative branches like the Senate, but the Senate will never ask the tough questions. Like, why are you mandating a vaccine that doesn't prevent transmission? Why are you trying to mandate a vaccine that doesn't even work against the variants that are currently spreading? Especially, why are you trying to mandate a vaccine for children aged 12 to 18 when we see these massive vaccine safety signals? My journal, where I'm the editor-in-chief, Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law, just published an analysis by Dr. Jessica Rose that shows that the CDC has manipulated data by withholding data, in the months coming up and the weeks coming up to critical policymaking. They withheld data on serious adverse events at a rate that was greater than mild adverse events from COVID-19 vaccine. This kind of manipulation belongs in a Senate hearing, and it belongs in a Senate hearing now. Now, more good news is that certain people are jumping ship. Francis Collins has announced he's going to retire. There are key personnel that we know have been hiding the bodies of the medical malfeasance and scientific fraud at the CDC who have decided to move on. And they see what we're doing. We have a grand jury investigation that's coming. I'm working with Dr. Henry Ely out of Oregon. And we have a lawyer and two senators that are put together with Dr. Ely, a grand jury investigation on the data manipulation from the CDC. So the people who can see what's coming, and of course we have the whole Wuhan origin, you know, yes, Francis Collins knew about the funding of the Wuhan origin. He was the director of the NIH, Fauci being the director of the NIAID, technically speaking, Fauci's, Collins is Fauci's boss. Well, when they funded that gain of function research and when the smoking gun grant proposal came out that said verbatim, and when Fauci lied to Congress and said, no, that's not gain of function research. And before that, he lied and said, well, no, we've never funded gain of function research. Well, there are consequences that are coming, but unfortunately, the big kind of institutional momentum that is set in place is decimating and is set to decimate not just our lifestyle, but also our society, our way of life, not the standard of living, but everything that we know. And so, you know, personally, I'm dealing with the questions that a lot of people have on their mind. What are things going to cost in a year's time? Dr. Chris Martinson on YouTube just did a fantastic analysis of the Federal Reserve and showed that during the entire existence of the Federal Reserve, they printed, up until 2001, they printed $800 billion out of thin air. But after 2001, it's gone up in a somewhat linear fashion. And since COVID, they went to $5 trillion. So they were out, you know, $2 trillion before COVID, and then they doubled down and tripled down. And now we're at $5 trillion, and we have this massive, massive amount of inflation that's coming. And so people need to study up and figure out how people did the same that they were doing with less. And that means, you know, not hoarding, but, you know, smart buy aheads on non-perishables and, you know, making do with what you have. And, you know, it's a bigger problem than just not eating out. It's a big problem because Martinson's estimation is that we're at 1,100% overreach on what the Federal Reserve has done relative to the amount of wealth that our country actually has. So the good news is that the medical industry is going through the schism. We're going to see kind of a new industry of medical options for people. The question is, can these new ethical medical professionals, when they create ethical medicine and they leave the unethical medicine behind, are they capable of having sufficient baseline power to establish their own medical boards that the executive branches of government in the 50 states will recognize and empower, and then prevent regulatory capture, prevent the capture of these boards. So if you're a medical professional and you think that you're alone and you lost your job, just go find your colleagues. They're out there. Find the people. Gather. This is a new labor movement. I'd never in my life would think that the labor movement would come from the right. But the labor movement has been dead in the United States for some time. And in a healthy functioning society with what we call homeostasis, you have to have both voices, both visions, both viewpoints in balance. You can't have a totalitarian power from the left or from the right in a way that's going to be sensible and healthy. We all feel from our own political viewpoint that we have the answers, but many of our answers, if you take away your answers that you think are your answers that are only really responses to the other side's madness, they're not really answers. That's your psychological attempt to balance the spreadsheet of reality in your mind. And of course, the politicos hijack that. They do psychological studies on the public on what's going to trigger them. And you know, it brings to mind this whistleblower from Facebook who's saying that, you know, Facebook actually does things to amplify things that cause people to become angry because, well, mainstream medicine, yellow journalism, has been doing this since time immemorial, since we've had the printing press. So, you know, the politicos know how to do multi-dimensional analysis through polling and everything else and try to figure out what keeps us divided. So I see the massive, massive kind of implosion that's happening and is going to happen with the overbuilt, overspent big medical infrastructure as really super good news and a cottage industry of private practices, concierge medical services that don't even bother with vaccination because it's not on their menu. I see that as good because then we can see a future of you know, medical professionals that are actually working to improve health, not maintain illness for profit.
Okay, Jack, let's go to break. I'm talking with Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. And what is that? You just mentioned another publication that you have. What is that? I'm sure people would be interested in that before we go to break. Yeah. What is that?
Well, it's one of two publications that I have. I'll talk about the other one after break, but it's a peer-reviewed academic research publication called Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law. We have a fantastic editorial board. All of our papers and studies are totally blind peer-reviewed. It's objective, and the papers that are there give the rest of the story on what's wrong where there's a mismatch between public health policy, medical practice, not too often, I hope, the law, and what the science actually says. It's okay. A fantastic article. It's a fantastic articles there.
Okay, Science, Public Health Policy, and the Law. We're going to go to break. Before we do that, though, another great partner, new partner of the show is Kirsch Insurance Group. And their website is iKirsch, that's KIRSCH.com. They're specialist in the Medicare arena. And there is an open enrollment period where if you are going to want to make some changes with your Medicare plan, the time to do the research on that is from October 15th through December 7th, and that's when you can join, switch, or drop a plan, and then that coverage begins on January 1. And when I've talked with Marlon and Danielle and Naomi over at Kirsch Insurance Group, they said, you know, each individual is different. They have different needs, different budgets, and so at Kirsch Insurance Group, they work with a lot of different carriers, and they can help you tailor your plan just for you. So check out iKirsch, that's K-I-R-S-C-H. That's iKirsch.com. We'll be right back with Dr. James Lyons-Weiler.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there as well. And you can email me at Kim@KimMunson.com as well. On the line with me is Dr. James Lyons-Weiler. He is with IPAC, which is the Institute for Pure and Applied Knowledge. And we're talking about these vaccines. Jack, it's always a great conversation.
Well, thanks so much. You know, one of the articles that I've recently written is actually about a treatment that was being forwarded throughout media. It's gone through this mainstream media called molnupiravir. It's by Merck. And I had an occasion to actually go into the clinical trial operations of Merck on this drug. Now, when they launched the studies for this drug, which they're claiming cuts hospitalization down in half, by half, they actually did it in a world where we already had a huge amount of studies, 29 studies that showed that ivermectin was effective. in early treatment, 32 studies that showed hydroxychloroquine were effective. Now, these studies totaling 26,000 and 54,000 combined on ivermectin and on hydroxychloroquine, that's all been published and talked about and pushed out there by ethical physicians like Dr. Pierre Corey, who I can now say is a colleague and friend of mine. But this study on molnupiravir, they found that 7.3% of patients given molnupiravir were either hospitalized or died after treatment, but none of them actually died, compared to 14.1% of placebo people who received placebo. And while none died on the treatment arm that received molnupiravir, and 14.1% who received placebo died, it is a huge question why those people were only given placebo. Right, so they had 775 patients, they said, in the study, and 14.1%, and these are people who were not hospitalized who got COVID-19 diagnosis. Now, they ignored all the other treatments. And this is, you know, Fauci's go home and sicken in place medical care for people with COVID-19. When you tell a patient you tested positive, now go home and sicken in place, those people become incubators for the virus. They'll go home until they get high viremia and now come back if you're sick enough. Viremia is the amount of virus in your body. So Merck and the NIH allowed 14.1% of people in the control arm to develop severe COVID-19 and die with no treatment. That's unacceptable. That's unethical. Totally unethical. We're talking about Merck. Now, there's more problems here because in my review of the clinical research, I found that there was not just one study of molnupiravir, right? There was a second study of hospitalized patients. And that study was actually terminated after they accrued a significant number of patients. 304 patients were accrued to that study, but the study was terminated due to, quote, business reasons. And these are studies. The study was of hospitalized patients that were given this new drug, molnupiravir. And I've, in the past, I'm not saying Merck did this, but in the past, I've heard clinical researchers say that sometimes what pharmaceutical companies will do is they'll run one clinical trial on a drug, and then they'll take the patients that aren't doing well on the drug, it's not effective, or they'll take the patients that are actually having severe adverse events on the drug, and they'll put them in another trial. And they'll actually split the data that way, so it makes the drug look safer or more effective. I'm not saying they did this, but a lot of people are looking at this problem. Why did they terminate this second study, right, for quote unquote business reasons? That's a big question. Again, we need a Senate hearing over this. And the fact is, when you run a clinical trial, you should not be using a placebo when we have so much science that supports early exposure to early use of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, fluvoxamine. There's so many clinical options out there for early treatment that will save people's lives. Dr. Pierre Corey of the Frontline Doctors estimates that 85% of the deaths that have occurred that are attributed to COVID-19 were completely preventable just through ivermectin. And he stands by that estimate. And I've looked at the data, and I think that he's exactly right. So this molnupiravir is out there. It's the bell of the ball. Anthony Fauci is out there saying, don't get too excited. It's not so effective that we don't need the vaccine. Well, that's a way to hype molnupiravir. It's like, wow, it's that good. Fauci has to tell us it's almost as good as the vaccine. In reality, there are studies on ivermectin that are more impressive. There's a nasal spray that we know of from Sanitize, a company in Canada, that clears the virus in 95% of people. Sanitize is the company, clears the virus in 95% of the people within 24 hours and clears it in 99% of people in 72 hours, regardless of how severe their COVID is. And you can order it online. I have some here at my home. It comes from Israel.
Okay, and it's where can you get it? You said it's Sanitize. Is that where the website is?
Yeah.
Or
Sanitize. Go to Sanotize on your favorite search engine. Look that up, nasal spray, and look at their press release and look at their studies. Amazing. Okay. Three clinical trials, randomized clinical trials. How come Fauci's not on CNN and going across the board telling people that you can save your lives with a nasal spray? You take a couple of shots for a few days up the nose and clear the virus. And regardless of how severe COVID is, they're allowing people to die. We definitely need you to get control of this, the people, and talk to your senators, call them now and tell them that you need to know why this is not on Fauci's lips all the way across the press.
Oh, gosh, James, the time goes way too quickly when you're on, but I just looked this up. That's S-A-N-O-T-I-Z-E. And you said this is something that's very effective. I so appreciate these conversations. And we've got to make sure that it's not 2 months before you're on the show again.
Well, thank you so much. I want people to find my article on molnupiravir at Popular Rationalism. Look, go to your search engine and search for Popular Rationalism. It's a Substack account. And you'll be able to find that article. And please do me a favor. It's got more reads than any other article I've ever written. Please share that article with your representative. Let's get to the bottom of why Merck is doing this.
Okay. Dr. James Lyons-Weiler, thank you for the great work that you're doing. And we'll talk to you again very soon.
Thank you, Kim.
And our quote for the end of the show is from H.L. Mencken. He said, "The urge to save humanity is almost always a false front for the urge to rule." So, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.